Okay, good evening, Oshavua Tov, everyone. Welcome back to the In the Eyes of Our Brother Shir. Tonight we are starting Shevet Dan, the fifth brother biologically, it's also very apropos for us to start with him because we'll speak a little bit more next week about the fact that the tribe of Dan is associated with the month of Teves, and we just started the Jewish month of Teves, so it's very apropos. And so as we begin to speak a little bit about Dan, so this week, probably next week also, we'll speak about Dan, and then over the next several weeks, we'll speak about the rest of the sons as they fall out biologically, which are the four sons of the maidservants of Bilhah and Zilpah, and we'll note more often than not, it's clear that there is a strong differentiation between the eight sons that come from Leah and Rachel Imenu, and the four sons that come from Bilhah and Zilpah. And the reason why that seems to be the case is because of the fact that the wives, the individuals, Bilhah and Zilpah, are so fundamentally different in terms of their relationship with Yaakov than that of Rachel and Leah Imenu, in particular because of the fact that it seems clear that the Torah says that there was a proper marriage and a marriage ceremony. Yaakov, even though he didn't intend to marry Leah, he did marry Leah. He knew he married Leah. And then he ultimately ends up marrying Rachel Imenu. But Bilhah and Zilpah, he never really married them. So their status in the family always seems to be a little bit lower. And also because of the fact that they were joined the family as maidservants. And it seems like they never really necessarily got out of that status. There is a machlokus regarding what their status is with Yaakov. Were they actually his wives or were they his concubines? And that's a machlokus that they're some who say that they were no his proper wives, and other people say they were not his proper wives. Probably the best hint as to what our Masorah, as to what our tradition believes about them, is to the number of imahus. We spoke a little bit about this last year, but the number of imahus that we say that we have. How many imahus do we usually say that we have? Four, right? There's a Sara Imenu, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Whatever happened to Bilhah and Zilpah? As far as I last heard, they were the Bilhah and Zilpah represents the four mothers of one third of the Jewish people, but they're not listed as part of the regular list. And it would seem because of the fact that no matter what, their status always seems to have been just a little bit lower at the very least than Rachel and Leah, regardless of what, even if they were the proper wives. And that would also then give us a hint to help us see that the four sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, although they are of course equally Jewish and part of the Jewish people, they also probably were seen as just maybe a little bit less, right? Not to get racially charged or anything, but it could be that that these four tribes, maybe that they were a little bit darker than the rest, that there is some historical analysis of that, whether or not that's true. There's no way of knowing, but there is something to be said about that, that these were the maidservants, whatever, etc. That said, the odds are that most of the tribes were probably darker because they were all Middle Eastern, but nonetheless, so it seems clear that these four brothers were maybe at a little bit of a lesser status because of the fact that their mothers were started out as maidservants, and even if they became full wives at the end, they were probably a little bit less than Rachel and Leah. So let's begin, let's break into Dan, and you'll see as we go through Dan, we'll sort of ping-pong a little bit. We'll speak a little bit about Dan, then go to speak about the brothers in general as it relates to Dan, and then we'll go back and to Dan towards the end. So we begin with Dan's birth, and now Dan is such a fascinating individual because he is the first child of one of the maidservants, and the question really is whose mother, who is Dan's mother? Is Dan's mother Bilhah, which she is the biological mother, or is it Rachel Imenu? If you take a look at the pasuk, it's not so clear, or maybe it is very clear, so let's see what the pasuk says. Source number one, Vatitein lo es Bilhah shifchasa le'isha. So Rachel Imenu gives Bilhah to Yaakov as an isha. That literally means as a wife. My translation over here says as a concubine, but therein lies the tension. Does it mean concubine? And doesn't mean wife, whatever. So she's given over to Yaakov. Vayavo eleha Yaakov. Yaakov is intimate with her. Vatahar Bilhah vateled Yaakov bein. And she conceives. She becomes pregnant, and she gives birth to a son. Vatomer Rachel dan. I'm just gonna make it bigger on my screen. Vatomer Rachel danani Elokim vegam shama bekoli vayitin li ben alkin karashimo Dan. So interestingly, who's the one who names Dan, not Bilhah? Rachel Imenu, which would seem to indicate the fact that Rachel is the mother, whether or not she, even though she's not the biological mother, she is the surrogate mother. She is the spiritual mother, if you will. And so it seems clear from the pasuk itself that Rachel considers herself the real mother. Now, how does she react to this? You'd assume for a woman who's been infertile for many years and a woman who has never never blessed with children, although this is maybe not the purest form of how she assumed that this would all work out for her, that she's not having a biological child, you'd assume that she's having a surrogate child, that she would be ecstatic. However, the pasuk does not seem to reflect an excitement. It says that Danan Elokim, that God has judged me. That's what Rachel says. God judged me, and also he's heard my voice, Shama Bekoli, and as a result, since he judged me, and since he heard my voice, then Vayitinli, that's why he gave me a son, and that's why she called his name Dan, because of the fact that God judged her. Now again, the typical understanding of how you might perceive a woman who finally has a child after so many years would probably be, you know, one of absolute exuberance, not to say that God judged me. So how are we to exactly understand her perspective? And before we get there, how do we truly view her status? Is she really the mother? And so take a look at source number two. Rabbi Shamshon Afrala Hirsch says quite literally, we do view her as the mother. The verb, he says, don, has two meanings: to carry out justice on someone, as he quotes this pasuk over here, and number two, to see that someone gets his rights. And then he quotes a pasuk from Sefer Devarim. In our verse, the meaning of the verb is uncertain, but the continuation, when it says v'gam shama b'koli, works in favor of the first meaning, meaning to say that God dealt with me severely and denied me the joy of motherhood, but now he has heard my voice and given me a son. Which means to say that how are we supposed to read this pasuk? Don't read it that like Rachel Imino is like super depressed, right? Rather that what she says that God judged me. No, she's speaking about the whole process and the beginning of my life, at the beginning of my marriage, God judged me, but now he has heard my voice, right? Step A was that he judged me, meaning I didn't have any children, and then step B was that he finally heard my voice and therefore I did have a child. And therefore, says Rav Shamshon Afrala Hirsch, to whom she says, to whom I can be at least a spiritual mother. So evidently she was at the very least a spiritual mother. Although I did not actually give birth to the child, I can raise him and educate him. In this way, I too will be able to contribute to the upbuilding of the house of Yaakov. So it seems clear that she is the mother figure of Dan. Now the real question is going to be, what happens once Rachel Imino is blessed with her own biological children? Right? If you'll, we won't speak about this probably for a long time, but when we get to Yosef, so Rachel Imino is ecstatic when she has Yosef, her first biological son, but what then happens to Dan in her eyes? Is he no longer her child? Is he like thrown out with the bathwater, and the umbilical becomes the mother that he was always meant to have? So we'll have to analyze that a little bit more when we get to Yosef, and maybe we'll speak about that maybe a little bit next week as well. But ultimately, it seems clear that the relationship between Dan and Rachel Imino at the beginning was that she probably viewed him as her son, and he viewed her as his mother, and also Bila was like the maidservant, who was also its biological mother, but it would seem clear that the central mother figure was Rachel Imenu. Take a look, though, at source number three to help us frame why Rachel did seem a little bit not as positive as you would have expected. So Nechama Price frames it as follows. She says, source number three, what is Rachel suggesting by selecting this name? Let us consider two approaches to the meaning behind the name. Think about the context of Dan's birth. He is Rachel's first surrogate child after suffering so many years of infertility and isolation. Why choose a name that seems harsh, or at least distant, as is indicated by Rachel saying, God has judged me? This is not a name that suggests she is finally happy or even satisfied by the recent course of events. She doesn't name him Simcha, right, meaning happiness, or any other name that would capture her excitement. Why not? Perhaps she is not consoled because, after all, he is not her biological child. Therefore, deep down, she is still hoping and praying for a son of her own. This first possibility might show the relevance of his naming. So one perspective is to say that, yeah, Rachel Imenu was happy, but she wasn't as happy as she would have been, and so she was still sort of holding out for a biological child. This brought her some satisfaction, but it was some satisfaction. It wasn't complete satisfaction. Alternatively, back on the source, one might sense excitement and a pouring forth of emotion that has been building up for many years. She is exclaiming, finally, God has given me what I have been asking for all these years. God has judged me and given me what I deserve. She recognizes that God is behind the decision of who can have children and when those children are born. Hence, she is thanking him for having listened to her cries and allowing her to have one who feels like her own, since she gave Bila, her servant Ziako, so that she might bear children in her stead. In other words, the second perspective is to say that, no, she is happy. Okay, maybe her expression of it seems a little bit parve and not as excited as you might have thought. But okay, this is how she's expressing her excitement, that she is actually very happy about it. For the next part of our discussion, though, we're going to have to understand what was... So, fine. So, Don is born, and he spends his nice childhood. What is his relationship like with the rest of the brothers? And for that matter, what is the relationship like of all of the maidservants' children with the rest of the brothers? So, if you take a look at source number 4, we get a little hint to it when the Pasuk tells us as follows, in Perek Alamed Zayin, Pasuk Beis, chapter 37, Pasuk 2, Eila Todos Yaakov, right? So, these are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef, and then we immediately jump in to the Yosef saga. So Yosef ben Shiva Esrei Shana, Yosef was 17 years old. Haya Roe es Echav Batzon, he would like he would tend the flocks with his brothers. V'hu Naar es Bnei Bila es Bnei Zilpa, and he was a Naar with the sons of Bila and the sons of Zilpa. Neshe Aviv, the wives of his father. That would seemingly be a big proof that they indeed were the wives. Vayavo Yosef Estiba Samra Alavihim, and Yosef spoke, he brought bad reports about them to their father. So the first thing that you might want to point out over here is the fact that the Pasuk targets and pinpoints this one category, Bnei Bila and Bnei Zilpa, the sons of Bila and the sons of Zilpa. This in and of itself might help us see that the sons of Bila and Zilpa, meaning Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher, that they are all in their own singular category. They are different than the rest of the brothers. They are not the sons of Leah, they are not the sons of Rachel Imenu, they are the sons of Bila and Zilpa. How do I know that? Well, the Pasuk separates them, because it categorizes them as, these are the Bnei Zilpa and Bnei Bila, Bnei Zilpa and Bnei Bila, and these are, and then there's the rest. So by the fact that the Pasuk separates them, we are led to believe that perhaps there was a separation between them and the rest of the brothers, and indeed the Mepharshim assume that they were not as close with the sons of Leah as they might have been if they had come from someone else other than the maidservants. However, the really main question is, what is their relationship like with Yosef, right? So if their relationship is not going to be close with the sons of Leah, which again seems to be a given, what is their relationship like with Yosef? So if you take a look at Rashi in source number 5, famous Rashi, Klomer, the major word that doesn't make any sense in this pasuk is Naar, that who Naar is Bnei Bila es Bnei Zilpa, that he was a boy, he was a Naar with the sons of Bila and Zilpa. What does that mean, he was a boy with them? So how are we led to understand that? So it says Rashi, source number 5, Klomar viragil itzel Bnei Bila, that he was like, he was always hanging out with them, he was regularly with them, b'fi shehayu echad mevazin osan v'hu makarvan, because what used to happen with them, because the other brothers, the sons of Leah, in other words, they used to say that he's like one of the sons of Bila or Zilpa, and therefore he became close with the sons of Bila and Zilpa, because that's how the sons of Leah used to view him. However, the Ramban says no, that's actually not true at all. Source number 5, Rashi, would make you believe that the sons of Bila and Zilpa, they might have been separate from the sons of Leah, but that they were best friends with Yosef. That seems to not be the case according to the Ramban. The Ramban says no, that's actually the opposite of the truth. How do you know that? What's the best proof that Yosef was not close with the sons of Bila and Zilpa, and that they were in their own category? Well, take a look at the sale of Yosef when Yosef was sold, right? Last week's parsha. So take a look at source number 6. In Cain, Lama lo hitziluha b'nei ashfachos. Why is it that if the maidservant's sons were so close with Yosef, how come they didn't try to save him from the pit when he was thrown into the pit and then sold? You'd think that they should have helped him, right? V'hu ohevo tam u'makarvan u'magil aviv al ha'achim b'bizyonam, right? Why didn't they try to help him? So says the Ramban, v'im ne'mar shi'yiru, maybe you'll say, oh no, why? They actually did have a good relationship with him, but they didn't want to help him because they were afraid min ha'achim. They were afraid from the other brothers. Who's the other brothers? They were afraid from the sons of Leah. But says the Ramban, v'hine heim dalet. Let's do a little math here. There were 4 sons of the maidservants. Ve'ruvin imahem, and we know, of course, that Reuven was on their side, because Reuven was the first person to step up to try to save Yosef. Ve'yosef atzmo, and then there's Yosef himself. V'tiga veri adam aleihem, and therefore, if you have it like that, so the numbers, therefore, there are 11 brothers at this point in total that are around in this pit story and being sold, when Yosef is sold. So you have 6 brothers on Yosef's side, and 5 on the other side wanting to sell him. So why didn't those 6 brothers just come and overpower those 5 brothers? So says the Ramban, V'hu im b'nei Bila v'im b'nei Zilpa nesheaviv tamid lo yifrad mehem ba'avor na'aroso. He was actually always with Bila and Zilpa his entire childhood. Ki lehem tziva aviyam shishmeruhu v'yashar suhu lo No, says the Ramban. Therefore, since it doesn't make any sense that clearly if this was the case that they were on his side, they would have helped save Yosef from that whole scenario, it must be that they were not close with Yosef, and then that would actually make a lot of sense. That why was it that Yosef was always with the sons of Bila and the sons of Zilpa? Because their father commanded them to be. So the father knew that the sons of Leah perhaps would always maybe have their eye out on Yosef to maybe they didn't like him so much because of the jealousy between their mothers, between Rachel and Leah. So Yaakov had said to the sons of Bila and the sons of Zilpah, make sure you're always watching out for your brother Yosef. You never know what's going to happen. But then what was the result of that? Then says the Ramban that based on his read of the Pasuk, Yosef then spoke Lashon Hara about Bila and Zilpah to their father. So they had a bad relationship. So therefore, at the end of that, based on the Ramban's perspective, the sons of Bila and the sons of Zilpah, not only were they not close with the sons of Leah, but they also were not close with the sons of Rachel Aminu. What was their relationship like with Binyamin? That seems to remain unclear. But it would seem that they are their own category unto themselves. They maybe did not have the best relationship, or certainly maybe not an equal relationship with the rest of the brothers. So now jump back to Dan. Let's conclude this year by talking about the bracha that Dan received from Yaakov Avinu. Now, the bracha that Yaakov gives Dan is a very good one. If you look at it, let's read the Pesukim inside at source number 6a. Dan Yadin Amo Ke'achad Shiftei Yisrael. That Dan will be like he will judge his people, he'll rule over his people as one of the Shvatim of Israel. Yehi Dan Nachash Alei Derech Shvifon Alei Orach Hanoshech Ikvei Susvei Pol Rochu Achor. So Dan, he's going to be like a snake on the road, a viper on the path that bites the horse's heels so that his rider is thrown backward. And I wait for your deliverance, O Hashem. Now, so again, what's so fascinating about this bracha that Yaakov gives Dan? It starts off sounding great. Wow, Dan's going to be a leader. This is like Yehuda almost. He sounds like he's going to be the king. He's going to be the leader of the Jewish people. But then it calls him a snake. Now, it could be a snake is a good thing, but the odds are, you know, being compared to a snake doesn't sound that good. So there's seems to be a dual nature in the bracha that Yaakov gives Dan. And we'll see ultimately that there is this dual nature that continues to exist throughout the lineage of Dan. And this seems to represent maybe why the tribe of Dan never became perhaps as great as, if we want to compare him to any other tribe, as great as the tribe of Yehuda, because even though he has some leadership qualities, the negative aspects of his leadership seem to detract from the greatness of his leadership. So, let's see how we're to understand these different aspects of the bracha. So again, there's two aspects really. There's the first part where Dan Yadin, that he's going to be a judge, he's going to be a ruler, and there's the other part that he's like a snake, he's a serpent. So take a look at source number 7 at Rashi. Rashi says as follows: Kol Yisrael yu ke'echarimo ve'es kulam Yadin. That Dan is going to have a singular individual who's going to judge the Jewish people. That's going to be a leader. Who's that? V'yal Shimshon Niba Nebuazo. Yaakov Avinu was not speaking about necessarily the tribe of Dan as a whole, but rather he was speaking about one person in particular that was going to come from the tribe of Dan, and that was Shimshon, right? Samson the judge, or he comes from the tribe of Dan. He's the most famous, clearly the most famous character that comes from the tribe of Dan, and that's who Yaakov was talking about. Not that he were going to be a ruling tribe, but that you're going to have this one individual named Shimshon come from you. The Odish Lefarish Ke'echad Shiftei Yisrael. So then Rashi says, and this is where it gets very interesting, what does it mean that you are going to be like the Echad Shiftei Yisrael? You're going to be the one encompassing the tribes of Israel. He says, "K'miuchad shebashvatim." You're going to be a select individual among the shvatim. Who David? Like David, shebam Yehuda. You're going to be like the tribe of Yehuda. So this is fascinating that Dan is actually compared to the tribe of Yehuda in Rashi, and this is quoting a Medrash, that the Medrash says this. And the biggest question is that we'll speak a little bit more about next week is what in the world does the tribe of Dan have to do with Yehuda? Most people know nothing about this tribe, but evidently now we're saying that Dan is like one of the most well-known and well-respected tribes. How could that be? And the most basic answer is that it actually makes a lot of logical sense, right? I think Nechama Price points this out like the following, that if you look at the brothers, so if we assume that the brothers, you know, were sort of in pairs, right, which you might want to assume that because, you know, you have Shimon and Levi that we spoke about extensively, that they were a pair, right? Reuben was sort of like on his own for some reason. Shimon and Levi became a pair. Who would be the next pair? Yehuda, and then Dan, right? Biologically, they were the closest in age after Shimon and Levi. So then Yehuda and Dan came. So it would make a lot of sense that they would actually have some similarities. So whether or not they become two peas in a pod as life goes on, fine. So that seems to not be the case, that they end up separating. But there do seem to be similarities with them. Again, we'll speak a little bit more about that next week. Let's learn a few other commentaries and perspectives of what the bracha actually means. So the Ibn Ezra says, what does it mean, Dan Yadin Imo? Rem, source number 8, Remes Sheyehiye Bal Degel Ke'echad B'nei Hagviros V'nei Hayake Katsin al kol am me'ashvachos. He's going to be like the leader, and when they're camping in the desert, he's going to be like the leader over the sons of the maidservants. So meaning he's not necessarily going to be the leader of all Klal Yisrael, but he will be a leader over the maidservants' children, which is okay. That's his own form of leadership. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. And then sources number 9 and 10 both spell out for us that no, not that Dan is like this magnificent leader, that there's going to be a singular individual that represents like kingship. No, that's Yehuda, right? So rather, what was Dan? Take a look at the Chizkuni source number 9. That Dan will judge his people. This tribe has walked loyally in the footsteps of Moshe as well as of Yehoshua, as testified to in the Sefer Yehoshua. Right, so he quotes the pasuk. We'll skip that for now. It was this tribe's task to ward off any attacks from the rear. So this is an important facts about the tribe of Dan, that in terms of the camping in the desert, the tribe of Dan was in the back. And what Dan became famous for and well known for and respected for was the fact that they were like the defenders of the back. So anyone who was like a lost straggler who didn't know where they lost their family, whatever, Dan would find them and reconnect them with their family. If someone tried to attack, they would protect them. So because they were like this like last line of defense in the back of the encampments, so that's how Dan was viewed as these leaders, as these judges, as these rulers over the Jewish people. And the Rashbam in Source number 10 basically says the same thing. The reason why I brought him, though, is just take a look at the opening line. It's such a strong line. He says, those who explained this as a reference to Shimshon, one of the judges of Israel, have read the text only superficially. Do they really think that Yaakov on his deathbed would prophesy concerning a single specific individual who moreover fell into the hands of the Philistines and ended his life as their victim? So says the Rashbam, it doesn't make any sense to claim that this prophecy would have been specifically about one individual. First of all, why would he categorize an entire tribe by one individual? And number two, Shimshon had his flaws, so it's hard to believe that this would be the individual who Yaakov would be prophesying about. So therefore, that's where this other perspective comes from, to say that Shimshon was not who Yaakov was talking about. However, that is probably the more classical, traditional approach. The Rashi, I think the Ramban, I think the Radak also all talk about the fact that Yaakov was specifically speaking about Shimshon. And then finally, take a look at source number 11. How are we to understand the second half of the verse, right, when he's called the snake? So the Radak says as follows, source number 11, Yaakov compared Dan to different kinds of serpents which do not travel or hunt in packs, but rely on their wits, killing many. Shimshon, the most prominent warrior of the tribe of Dan, was a loner, never involving others when he faced danger. Now, I think what the Radak is alluding to over here is something very significant about who Dan was and what the tribe was all about, because you're going to have to ask yourself, and as we continue to speak about him, we're going to have to wonder, why did he not ever raise to the caliber of Yehuda? If Yehuda was the paradigm of what it meant to be a king, and he was indeed the beginning of all the kings that would come out of the Jewish people, how come the tribe of Dan didn't ever get anywhere near that, such that we don't even really know that much about the tribe of Dan? And it would seem to be that because of the second half of this bracha from Yaakov, because of the fact that on the one hand, while he was a leader and he did rule over the Jewish people in some way, shape, or form, he also seemed to have this other quality, which was like a more loner quality. He was not really a man of the people as much. And Nechama Price really spells this out very nicely in source number 12. Take a look. She says, Yaakov's blessing captures both the positive and the negative aspects of the tribe of Dan. He will lead and be successful against his enemies, yet concurrently, he will be isolated, angry, and disliked by those around him. And that dual nature of what Dan is all about is really something that continues to be reflected as we have just begun speaking about Dan, and we'll see that it really is reflected in many other aspects of his life and those who come from him. But we'll stop right here with that. Next week, God willing, we'll speak a little bit about the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu gave him, and we'll see how there's a further comparison to the tribe of Yehuda, and we'll speak a little bit more about that Dan-Yehuda connection and see if there's anything else there. For now, let me wish everyone a beautiful night and a Shavua Tov.